Welcome to the M2 Woman podcast. This episode is from our M2 Woman Journey to Excellence live forum, held on the 20th of November 2020. It's brought to you by Arashiko, Piper Heidsieck, and Polynesian Spa. Okay, first question. When hiring, how do you ask someone what their ethnicity is? And is this an appropriate question? We are wanting to diversify but cannot assume. Who would like to answer this one?
Well, at a binary level, it's in the application form and you can tick as many boxes as you want.
Cool.
And I'm being really serious. That's one of the biggest things that we needed to grapple when we were trying to get the data, is it's not I'm one or the other.
Great.
It's there are many fruits to this rainbow, so don't limit yourself, right? So it's a simple tick box in the hiring. I don't know what you guys do at Fonterra, similar?
Yeah, so it's voluntary information. We have three categories. We have a pick list. So when we set our targets, our definition we gave to ethnicity is minority in each region. So as we've learned, you take China, for example, and 97% Han. You take the Middle East, for example, you know, these are cultures that actually, culturally, so these are probably the first clue. If you do have a global workforce, just check that your New Zealandness and our New Zealand way of thinking is consistent with the globe, because we've got amazing diversity out in our global markets. And then secondly, you probably, again, you've got to start somewhere. And in 2 years' time, you'll have the value of hindsight to learn. But I would encourage you to start. And as I said, it's likely that you might get it wrong. And it's only just now, after sort of 3 or 4 years, besides the fact that we haven't had movement in our targets, but we are trying to grapple with ways to make that easier. So as I said, we set the definition. Our system, I don't think the pick list it matches our definitions, but you only learn these things from trying, right? And you got to do it. So my suggestion is that you just start somewhere. And as I said, we went with ethnicity in each region. You're always going to get challenged. And again, sometimes I get challenged. And often I was with a group last week, and what came up is, what about South Africans? And I'm like, well, they can be South African. And so typically you will get to conversations that it actually isn't about ethnicity. They're just trying to have a conversation about something else, and they're not asking questions, they're making statements, which are on different topics.
I just want to add to that. It does take a little bit more time, but having and definitely voluntary, but having a line where people can actually write out their ethnicity themselves will help your organisation learn so much. I think we've all seen all those forms that we get around gender that say male, female, prefer not to say, and I still see those and I still think, what the, you know, it's just like so unaffirming of anyone. And I think you've got to be really careful around ethnicity as well. So it does take longer, but if you have the resource to put ethnicity in a line and people can identify how they want to identify, then I would say it's worth the resource.
Fantastic. Next question. What do you believe is the difference between gender equality and gender equity? And how does your organisation contribute to women empowerment?
Go, Zoe.
Gender equality is what you want to get to, right? Gender equity can be seen as the way in which that happens. So you can use affirmative action, you can use targets and quotas, which I'm a massive fan on, if I know not everyone is. And so it's acknowledging that we are in a situation where genders are not equal, and that equity needs to be used in ways to reach that outcome. And it's the same for ethnicity, it's the same for every identity.
Yeah, and I come back to this is why representation matters, because in the moment of hiring, if you have got a higher proportion of one demographic that does all the hiring and the firing, but in those moments when the REM is set and benchmarked against what they think looks good and what doesn't, that is what's going to make the impact, because it's too late afterwards, right? And so, again, this is why representation matters, because you need to have a balance and a mix of people who will have all of the views of this candidate. And this is how it manifests itself to lend to a gender gap, because we have consistency and repeated appointments based on what they think is good and what they don't think is good. Our story is interesting because in New Zealand we do have, for our New Zealand workforce, we have a gap of about 9%, close to 9%, and that's based on just that. You know, I think it's to do with representation. Globally, we actually have a gender gap in favour of women, because you have markets like, for example, in China, and we've sold our China farms, but 100% workforce is male. In South America, 100% workforce is male. In Sri Lanka, it's the same. And so these are these cultural dynamics that start to intersect and at play. So it's quite interesting. And in China, we have a really good picture in terms of women who are in senior roles. And so it's actually skewed in front of a woman, which is really interesting. But I will come back to representation matters, because you need people in those moments who appoint, in leadership, who typically do the hiring of the leadership roles, to make those decisions.
Right. This question's for you, Sean, no hiding. Given the data and research shows that corporates make more money with the more diverse leadership group, what is stopping corporate New Zealand from achieving this?
I think it's the decision makers' fear. So there's a fear of the unknown. As we know, it's more males in senior roles, and there's a fear behind actually opening up that agenda to be more inclusive. And it's bizarre, right? So, I mean, we can track our better balanced workforce at Chorus purely based on gender in leadership roles to our share price. So I just find it bizarre that we don't have people making better choices when ultimately we're here to make some money for our shareholders. And the why behind that why, I think it has to be fear-based.
Great. This is to anyone who wishes to answer. How do we remove the stigma that women and minorities in leadership roles did so by their own accord and merit rather than a drive for diversity and inclusion?
Say the question.
How do we remove the stigma that women and minorities in leadership roles did so by their own accord and merit rather than a drive for diversity and inclusion?
Should we go? No, that's good. I think it's a good one. Cool. I think we need to change the definition of merit. So we can't go, okay, this person has a degree and 5 years' experience. This person has 3 years' experience but has a whole lot of knowledge and skills that they've picked up from being a mum, or a whole lot of knowledge and experience they've picked up from growing up in a Māori household, or this person has lived experience of mental health, or this person has lived experience of living with a disability, or whatever it is. We can't go, a degree is up there, experience is up here, and all those other things are down here. So we need to look at merit in a much more inclusive way and be hiring for those reasons.
Yeah, I think it comes back to representation again. God, I know I'm sick of saying it myself, but it comes back to that. So we need people in those roles. I think the experience, the learning from COVID, right? So that, with a big loud thud, humbled all of us. And so you had these calls where, you know, pretty kind of who kind of people that you thought were quite native flash. And then they are sitting there with these kids screaming around them. I thought, oh, there we go. So really nice to see that, and I think learn from that experience. I think it's around busting stigmas. So again, so get in the room and just say, you know, I heard this, around getting and make your skin crawl to get change. There needs to be some uncomfortableness there, and if we're not doing that, then we're probably not going to get change at pace. But the compelling reason, again, is any good leader will be all over succession planning. And as I said, it is not that far away. 2038, you can feel Aotearoa changing at a pace. We are going to be a minority, majority. Those are our consumers. Those are our workforce. So if you've got any clues about future planning, that's a pretty compelling reason to start, you know, changing the way you do things, because if you get the same, you're going to get the same result. And to Sean's point, there's a business case that backs this up as well. But sometimes when you're having these conversations, you have to do a little bit of dressing it up in language. I've got to be careful because I'm not very good at maths, and I always get myself, you know, I start talking about these things in my head. I'm like, abort that conversation, you're going to... And then part of it, you've got to kind of bring some realism as well, and some empathy to it. I mean, I kind of, you know, I feel sorry for the buggers sometimes if they've spent 30 years in a career that's taught them this way, and then all of a sudden it's like, oh my gosh, I have to what? Have conversations? I don't get that. And so to your point right at the start around, that's where I think the opportunity for empathy comes through. And it's not a pity thing, and it's not, you will annoy, you will lose the room very quickly if you get up there in a kumbaya kind of way. Don't do that. Abort that.
Can I just build on the empathy piece? So COVID taught us a lot, I think, especially in the work from home environment, and I'll apply the male bias to an executive management meeting versus the female bias to how that meeting should operate. My door had do not enter, devices will be switched off. And I did. I was trying to keep the children away as we're having our first kind of big management meeting. Our general counsel had the kids come in and give her a cuddle. And I went, why aren't my kids showing me any love? And my wife pointed out I had this horrible message on the door that they would lose all their devices. And that is when I kind of went, actually, corporate is now at home, and home should be leading the corporate lens. And we as a management team look forward to our kids coming in and giving us a cuddle, because we saw a different side to the corporate life that we wouldn't normally have. And I felt left out when Elaine Campbell got that cuddle for the first time.
Oh, I love those anecdotes. This is a question for Hayley or Anahira. Partnership with Iwi goes beyond asking for buildings to be blessed. What do Iwi want from a good, lasting partnership that those in this room can aspire to?
Yeah, I think it's about honest and truthful engagement. Like I said earlier, you know, we're Auckland's oldest business partner. And so if you want to engage with us, you know, we would expect that it's on those merits, because we're not going anywhere. And it's in our best interest as well to make sure that we do a good job in our city, because most of our people actually live here. So, you know, everything that we do is to try and build a more vibrant Tāmaki Makaurau that actually reflects our people within it. And that is because we're not going anywhere. We need to invest our time and our resources in making sure that this city is thriving for our children, as well as your children, as well as everyone else's children. And I think that's what's truly, that's what's special about partnerships with us. But also, I think we're in a space now from our perspective where we're really clear on the types of people that we want to engage with. Like, we just, someone said succession planning before. You know, we're really, around this whole property thing, you know, we're driving really hard to make sure that in 10, 20 years, that in our company, they're all Ngāti Whātua. You know, and so we're building what that looks like right now. In terms of our governance structures, it's like 50-50 women and men. There's like he mana tō te tāne, he mana tō te wahine. Women have a role and they have their own mana, and men have their role and they have their mana. And so in our tribal structures, we have roles, but it's not one's here or one's there. It's we're equal because we need that balance. Everything's about balance, and we need that to enable our people to move forward. So I think when we talk about partnership, it's about making sure that we're all on the same page in terms of where we're wanting to go in terms of growth of our city and our country.
Yeah, I think at an individual level, typically our people appreciate effort in a genuine way. So, you know, to Rachel, to your point around, you know, leading out with a mihi, probably, I suspect, more nervous than you possibly ever been. And those moments matter, because I think it shows a genuine want, the desire from possibly a place of you know, vulnerability or uncomfortability. I think Zoe mentioned before around the isms, so we tend to talk in the tangas, so whanaungatanga, kaitiakitanga, manaakitanga, those sorts of things, and those, but at the heart of all of those concepts is this thread of beyond time, immeasurable. So up to the stars, you know, we come from darkness and we come to light. And so sometimes we don't have measures in the same sense, and we certainly don't stick, if anyone's heard of Māori time, we certainly don't stick to the same rules in terms of time on the watch. And so I think do some time in a really genuine way at an individual level, and I think as an organisational level, you're right. You will lose the heart of your people, particularly Māori people, if you are inviting them into the room to do a karakia and then shifting them out the next door when it's time to do business. That is going to lose the hearts of your people. And reach out. There are some amazing leaders, and I know, Kristen, you're here. Kristen leads the... leads the Māori strategy at Vodafone and has done some amazing work. So brought the Treaty of Waitangi conversation has typically been out of bounds for corporates. And in the past, I even got challenged on this, and I was able to say, well, we're not a treaty partner, so, you know, we get to tick out of that one. We get to opt out of that one. But think of the treaty in a evolving sense, whereby it means a place for everyone, because I don't think, lots of people think that inclusion is about exclusion of others. I think it's inclusion full stop of everyone. That's it. And once you start getting into these conversations of exclusion of others, then it's just going to get distracted on all of the things. So I think, be really genuine. That goes a long way.
Welcome to the M2 Women podcast. This episode is from our M2 Women Journey to Excellence live forum, held on the 20th of November 2020. It's brought to you by Adashiko, Piper Heidsieck, and Polynesian Spa.